Welcome to The Ether. Today is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, we got a CeFi space, quantitative trading for treasuries. Let's take a listen.
Going to give folks a few minutes to hop on. Let me grab Ben here for any questions and things. Or comments, go ahead. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, all good, all good. Just wanted to ask real quick. I just want to know what kind of risks and if there are any risks that are involved in borrowing and lending through Anchor Protocol.
Oh, so you're just kind of getting started on it? You haven't used it yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Okay, and I'm going to get your question, and then actually, 0x Leg kind of came on. We were actually going to do sort of a discussion related to some projects he's wanted to do. I figured we could just do to the spaces. But yeah, real quick, let me answer your question. So basically, the available collateral types on Anchor right now are bonded Ethereum and bonded Luna. And, you know, you can borrow a substantial amount against that, but your primary risk is, of course, liquidation risk, where the price of the asset falls and it falls below your loan to value ratio. And then the system sort of resets by selling approximately 15%, or actually comes closer to 25% of your asset if you get liquidated. So be careful with liquidations. And that's kind of the main risk. There are some other issues in the past where Anchor's system was not responsive enough, and the liquidations were not efficient enough, and people got liquidated at a much lower sort of price, so to speak, and lost more of their underlying collateral than would be the case today. So it is a lot more effective and efficient. But the primary issue is that if there's a major drop in the market very quickly, like a cascading liquidation event, like sometimes happens in crypto, then you'd want to be more careful. Typically in crypto, that's much more likely to occur after pretty sizable run-ups. It tends not to occur as easily near quote-unquote bottoms, although it has happened in the past, like back in March of 2000 with the big crypto dump, you know, during the pandemic time. So there's always some risk of that. That's the main thing I'd watch for. So manage your like loan to value ratio at a level that is perhaps less likely to get liquidated, and that's probably the best strategy for that. Does that answer your question? Or
yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of like practice and playing with it to sort of get it. You know, to really flesh out all the mechanics of it. So if you're going to do anything, go light and sort of practice and play on it and just see how you can use it to your advantage. And then like different strategies as far as how you use it, there's a whole nother, like you could have a whole nother discussion about just how do you trade, obviously, with leverage and such. And that can get into a lengthy thing. But let me get Leg on here. Hey, Leg, maybe introduce yourself and like we can kind of chat about whatever you want here.
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing?
Good, good. And did you need to bring anyone else up on here or is it just you and me right now?
No, just you and me for now. I just wanted to brainstorm some of the ideas that you and maybe some of the other members of the community would like to see built on top of Terra to utilize some of the ARB and grid bot strategies that you've been talking about and tweeting about, and something that you haven't seen being built yet.
Got it. Well, let me kind of like walk you through some of the actually, let me change the title of the space real quick so it's not so random anymore. So we can stick with the actual subject here. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so I think if you've been around trading in crypto long enough, you start asking yourself a question, and that is, how can I best optimize buying low and selling high in theory, right? Like that's the magic that everyone wants to accomplish. And there's obviously no perfect, there's no completely perfect way to do that, because, any attempt to sort of game the system could technically reduce the amount of sort of money you make on the upside, or you may be buying and writing down the price of an asset to the downside, otherwise known as sort of like accumulating inventory. Depending on the business model of like a hedge fund or whatever, you're going to have different levels of inventory risk that you might want to take on. And depending on who you're reporting to as a fund, like your investors or whatnot, what their risk appetite, what their tolerance is going to vary dramatically. A lot of traditional firms essentially run into the problem of if they are losing money on a quarterly basis and the time horizon of the people investing is short, then it makes them look bad, and that may make it hard for them to attract more investors. So there is this sort of price is a meme problem, where if your price of your underlying fund or asset or token, whatever the heck it is, for treasuries, you name it, like if your portfolio is not going up in value, it's hard to advertise to people that you make money for them, or that you make money for, in the future. So in other words, if you don't have a past portfolio performance in particular, it's hard to prove yourself in, the financial industry or whatever. So this is true of like large accounts. It's true of treasuries. It's true of trading houses. It's true. It's going to be true for you and me as individual investors. It doesn't really matter who you are. You're stuck with the same problem of, do I want to be selling high, buying low? Am I an investor? And like, what strategies can I use to sort of optimize my capital? So, starting out originally in stocks and such, playing around with trading was kind of where I started out. Then went into more heavy into just buy and hold investing in serious companies, which of course works out if you choose the right companies. And then subsequent to that, as crypto came along, it became a little bit more fun just playing the price action, because you look at things like Bitcoin and in particular, there's not necessarily a lot of news that matters. Like the price just goes up and down. It's sort of like an ultimate kind of truth-telling asset. It is it's highly the price movements are highly motivated by, you know, human beings and, you know, fear greed cycles and just, you know, all of that. So, you know, I found it's interesting to trade in crypto long ago just because you don't have to follow any real news, you know, barring a few examples like Mt. Gox and, pandemic dump and things like, there's a few news events that have really moved the market. So I just didn't like the idea of having to follow the news. Like one of the pain in the ass problems with stocks is, you know, earnings reports and figuring out, you know, when the price is going to drop and, you know, Steve Jobs dies and then the price of Apple falls and whatever, you know, these kinds of news related problems. If you're a real news junkie and you want to follow that every day, that's fine. But eventually you get to the realization that you want to be able to win in all of those markets. You want to be able to have a method to acquire the assets you care about somehow in almost any market condition and somehow be prepared to buy more. If you're kind of the Warren Buffett style investor where you have a lot of your money in cash, like, you know, at least 50%, then technically you're always potentially ready to buy something. But that also implies oftentimes you have a cash flow source to renew the cash pool, right? So as I kind of went along, what really got more and more interesting. So first off, if you look at Bitcoin, like you can do all sorts of interesting robotic, you know, trading strategies with this, but you don't get away from the problem of having to have some thesis in terms of technical analysis. You don't fully get away from the problem of like figuring out how to scale your buys in a certain way that, you know, either you A, don't run out of money, or B, you're underinvested, right? Like you guys probably understand what I'm saying. You know, like, for example, today, is this the bottom for Bitcoin or is it the middle? Is it the, you know, is it a local top? What is it today, right? It's really hard to say for sure. So if you were starting out a fund today, or a robotic trading platform like a GridBot or anything today, are you going to throw all your money at it today? Are you going to do a dollar cost average? Are you going to buy dynamically on the way down, meaning like if price drops, you just make larger and larger buys? Are you going to buy every day and then increase the size of your buy if the price goes down? So you do a recurring buy and make that actually get bigger as price drops. And where is your like revenue stream for this? Is it you have a pile of money that you're ready to invest, or is it, you know, you have like money that's coming in every month? Is it coming in every day? Like what is the like cash flow situation looking like for you? You have to sort of iron all that out first. And this is going to be different for like treasuries, DAOs, hedge funds, you know, major corporations, et cetera, et cetera. And depending on who you are, you may need to be in the green most of the time, right? Like you may not be able to you may be a company that has 90% say in stable coins and you're investing 10% hoping to make a little bit of gain there, but you know, you on paper don't want to have your portfolio look like it drops 50 to 80% or something like that, especially if you're a company that has to have a balance sheet and has to be able to show assets that it can borrow off of, or maybe they have outstanding loans and they have to have a certain amount of collateral on their balance sheet. You can see all the different problems that can emerge depending on your personal situation. So, you know, basically the first thing, you know, the first intuition is, okay, we have this volatility. How do we capitalize on the volatility of a purely speculative asset without a lot of news driven, you know, BS going on? So, you know, for Bitcoin, like if I were to start a grid bot today, what a grid bot is where you essentially have like take a piece of graph paper, you know, take the price today of, I don't know what it is. What are we at today? 40,000 or something? 38,000. All right. So 38,000. And I take a piece of graph paper and say 37,000, 36,000, 35,000, et cetera. Or some increment, I'm going to have a system that essentially automatically buys on the way down. And if that system is where the grid is arithmetic, meaning that the gaps between each price is even, like for example, like my my example that I just gave, 38,000, 37,000, 36,000, like that, that's considered an arithmetic grid, where the grid is basically, you know, simply adding or subtracting a certain amount from current price, right? A geometric grid is where you set like a percentage, and you, for each 1% down in price or 5% down, you know, you have a grid created based on percentages. As you can imagine, that's going to differ considerably on the way down and on the way up. And a percentage grid is called a geometric grid, and it's done slightly differently. There are pros and cons to both. The geometric grid is going to be more conservative in the sense that, like, it's going to exert more capital the lower the price goes. It's just the way that the grid ends up laying out. Additionally, you can add another element to a grid, which would be a pro rata system. A pro rata would mean that as the price drops, for example, you are increasing the size of your buy per each grid increment down. So let's say it's a geometric 1% pro rata 1% grid. For every 1% below current price, the size of my buy also increases by 1%. So it's geometric and pro rata, so it's like dual exponential in a sense. So what does that mean? It means that, like, in order for my, so if I set Bitcoin's lower price at 30,000, I think that 30,000 is the lowest it's going to go. Or, you know what, if it goes below 30,000, I'm fine with being a bag holder at 30,000, right? I can set the bottom of that grid at 30,000 to use up all my capital all the way to that bottom. But the more exponential I go, the more of a geometric element or the more of a pro rata element I introduced, the more cash has to be sitting, you know, doing nothing, right? Because in an arithmetic system, it's going to deploy that cash a little bit quicker. In a geometric system, it's going to deploy that cash way more heavily at the bottom. So if I'm a risk-averse individual, right, or a risk-averse hedge fund or company or a DAO or whatever, and I don't want to show, you know, like my portfolio going to shit, then I might need to stay in cash mostly, right, and buy much bigger on the way down. So that's the way to think about an exponential-based strategy on the way down. On the way up, a similar situation could be true. You could basically go exponential on the way up as well, and the size of your size of your cells increases as the price rises in the grid. And you can also make the pro rata system there too, where the size of your cells also increases as you go up. So if this type of system would work really, really well if you felt super confident in your tops and bottoms. So, and you wanted to take relatively low risk. An example of this would be a Litecoin grid, which might be a reasonable choice for this. Why? Because Litecoin's not going to fucking infinity. It's just not. Like, it's also probably not going to zero that easily. So therefore, you can kind of pick a number that's really conservative, like $50 Litecoin, right? What are the odds it gets back down there again? Not impossible. We're at about $100 Litecoin now, right? So, you know, you could do a grid between $150 and $50, and you could do an exponential pro rata grid, and you ought to do pretty well, assuming you're comfortable being a bag holder at the bottom. Because what if Litecoin goes to $50, then goes to $70 there and sits there forever? The benefit of a grid bot is, as every single grid increment is hit, it's going to buy and sell over and over and over again. And it's going to sort of like extract value from the volatility all the way as you go forward. So over, let's say, a year, you're going to see a grid bot essentially continue to extract value in the form of, say, Tether in most cases, like on KuCoin or Pionex grid bots. And you know, what you do with that cash is up to you at that point. Either you're doing it on purpose to de-risk that position, so you're taking that cash and you're, you know, deploying it elsewhere, or you're going to use that cash, and if, let's say, you want Litecoin and it goes to $50, you could use all the cash you got up from the grid arbitrage trades. And an arbitrage trade essentially is up and down one grid movement, would be considered one arb. So you basically gain the value of like those little micro volatility moves, right? So that cash, you could then figure out what you're going to do. You can put it in something else. You can put it in some yield bearing instrument. You could put it in, I don't know, whatever you want. Okay. So the downside of doing a grid bot would be, you would need to know exactly what kind of price range you can tolerate. The reason why I think Bitcoin's a good choice if you're going to do a grid bot is because A, like there's no evidence it's going to zero anytime soon. That's really important. So this might work really well on say Apple stock, for example. You want something that essentially has like a gold standard status and not like a non-zeroable asset, right? The second piece of that is you want something that goes back up in a reasonable period of time, right? And you want something that's at least, you know, modestly predictable, because the wider the grid is, the less profitable it is. That's the key to volatility or quantitative trading, is your ability to predict the volatility range for any given asset. And that's the toughest part, really, because if you look at crypto, what happens? Something will go sideways, or, you know, what are arguably a sideways, you know, or down or up, you know, in sort of like a mild volatility. And then all of a sudden you'll have these massive moves up or massive moves down. And a lot of the gains and the losses are really made in those big moves, right? And how do you capture those moves? And can you capture those moves in the context of something like a grid bot is the question. I think with Litecoin or something like that, where you're pretty sure it's not going to infinity and you're pretty sure you don't want to be a big Litecoin investor, it makes sense, because like you could be pretty conservative with that. Like, for example, Litecoin's like at $100, I think, right now. You could set a top number to sell it all off if it reaches 125, and you could set a bottom number of 150, so it preserves most, I'm sorry, a bottom number of 50, or even lower perhaps, so it preserves most of your capital. And therefore, you're just trading the volatility and just leeching off of the Litecoin people, right? So that's kind of how you might use a grid bot. So yeah, that's sort of like the basic level, I would say the most basic level style of bot would be a grid. Then you get into what's called a rebalancer, which is a little bit different. The way a rebalancer works is, number one, it works sort of like a LP position. It's essentially a auto compounding mechanism by nature, meaning it helps to be bullish on the asset that you're rebalancing. It's an asset you want to own. Otherwise, like, why do this? Because it's going to continually keep rebalancing to buy more of the asset that you want. So rebalancers can be done with like multiple coins, and they can be done with like a stable coin plus an unstable coin. Let's just use that second example for simplicity. So a rebalancer essentially would be, imagine two swimming pools, each filled, let's say, the equal amounts of water. So let's say 50-50. And like someone jumps into the, you know, A pool, and then water spills over to the B pool, right? And then flip side would be someone jumps into the B side of the pool, and then water spills in the A side of the pool. And essentially the pool can get bigger and bigger. So imagine the walls are infinitely high, but there's like a way for water to spill over to always keep the water at 50-50. So a 50-50 rebalancer would be like 50% cash, 50%, let's say, Bitcoin or Luna or whatever. And, you know, every 1%, so 1% rebalancer would be such that if the size of the Luna pool, because Luna's price goes up, in a 1% situation, it'll sell half a percentage point of Luna, and it's going to dump it in the UST pool. And then if Luna's price falls, it's going to buy it back with the UST, right? So a rebalancer is natively auto-compounding, because the UST pool, if it keeps getting bigger, will go to buy more Luna if it drops, and vice versa. So again, a rebalancer is more for like a slow bullish position, but not like an impulse move. Like if you're thinking Luna's just going to explode in the next week to the upside, then there's no point in being in a rebalancer, grid bot, or anything else. It makes way more sense to either hold it or just buy like on leverage, even if you're really, really bullish for some reason, like for, you know, whatever that reason might be. So that's kind of your options as far as like things you could do. So the rebalancer is really attractive because it works well over the long run. It preserves half your capital in cash at all times. And let's say Luna's price, you know, dropped a lot for some reason. You could exit the rebalancer and just take all the cash and just dump it all in the Luna and call it a day too, right? You could, you don't have to necessarily ride up the rebalancer if you don't want to. So that's another thing you could add to a mechanic of like trading with these things. But if your goal is basically just to just let it ride, the rebalancer, like a liquidity provider position with some kind of with yield, an LP position has incentivized yield and transactional yield, whereas a rebalancer bot basically uses the volatility ARB yield. It just keeps buying and selling, right? That's how it's like fueling itself. So after a while and kind of playing on Terra, I was like, you know, there are some interesting features on Terra that you don't have in traditional stock markets, and you don't have in like, you know, classic Bitcoin grid bot trading. And the magic ingredients that we have are, one, we can use assets that actually natively earn yield that are natively liquid staked. So the perfect example of this is Bonded Luna. So the beauty of Bonded Luna is you can ride the price action of Luna, but you'll notice if you go to Anchor Bond and you like go to the claim section, while it's in your wallet, you're basically making money the whole time with UST, right? So that's kind of the nonstop yield mechanism of Luna. Other assets that are similar would be like a Bonded Atom, a Bonded Solana, or whatever. Ideally, you'd want assets that all of which you want. So you don't want assets that you're playing with that are stupid. You don't want them just for high APYs because you don't want to, because bots and rebalancers, the intuition is you want them running for years in theory. And if you're going to run them for years, it only makes sense to own coins that you want and not coins that like you just enter into the rebalancer just for the volatility, right? So volatility is good to enter into the system because that's how the system buys and sells for you, right? But you ideally want highly volatile assets that also earn yield simultaneously. So that's a like important piece of this puzzle. So imagine like the rebalancer I mentioned before, like a UST Luna, but instead you're talking about UST on the one side. The swimming pool is filled with UST. The other swimming pool is filled with Luna. The difference is that Luna is ejecting UST the entire time, right? And you could eject that UST into various places. You could go and claim it and like stick it in Anchor Earn, for example, and then take the 20% yield and then dump that in the UST rebalancer pool. Or you could take that UST and like split it 50-50 and put it into half UST, half Luna, right? You're sort of dollar cost averaging in. You could take all of that UST and auto compound it to more Luna or more Bonded Luna. And that way you're just simply making more UST that way. So all these different like interesting tactics come about in a two coin rebalancer with UST plus Bonded Luna. Now add another layer to this. You could add one more bonded asset. Let's say, for example, Bonded Atom, which is coming soon. With Bonded Atom, the interesting thing is the yield is higher. Okay, it's like 14%. Atom is wickedly volatile. If you've ever seen it on a short-term chart, it's really good for like grid bot trading. Actually, I used to grid bot Atom for quite a while early last year. So you can make the volatility ARBs on the price movement because you want that volatility, right? That's what we mentioned. Atom is likely to go up over the years just because there's a lot coming to Cosmos and it's like a core piece of the Cosmos. And, you know, we don't have to get into all the reasons why I'm bullish on Atom. The point is, I think it's a reasonable one to have. So that being the case, it meets the criteria for use in a system like this, where you like your Bonded Luna that's making you UST. You like your Bonded Atom that's making you more UST, because that's how bonded assets on Terra work. They just eject UST, which is nice. Because when they eject UST, instead of the underlying asset, it allows you to program like the yield diversion of that UST a lot easier than to have to sell something and have another step, right? So it's interesting. I think these assets are really, really ripe for use in like a bot situation. So one bot example would be a Luna, a B Luna B Atom 50-50 pool. And what's interesting about that is I think Luna's price is more likely to appreciate over time because it's deflationary with non-inflationary yields. Atom's price, I think, won't necessarily go up as much as easily. However, and the reason for that is because of the inflationary yield. However, the benefit is the yield is higher, right? So like if you are buying Atom on the way down with the UST yield that's coming off of these assets, then what happens is that your yield-bearing asset, which is Atom at like 14% yield right now, that will eject more yield and therefore can refuel your bot with more capital, right, automatically. And that's what's interesting about Atom in that because the price won't go up as much, the UST coming off your Luna is more likely to go and buy more Atom because the rebalancer naturally what it's going to do is it's going to sell some Atom to buy the lower priced coin, but the UST coming off these assets can also be used to buy the lower priced coin to fill in the gaps. So some interesting things can be done there. You could do a B Atom B Luna pool, like a 50-50. You could do something like a 50% UST, 50% Luna, 25% Luna, 25% bonded Atom style pool, right? So each of these assets is emitting UST while simultaneously you get the volatility arbs that I loved out of Bitcoin bots. And simultaneously they're assets that you want to have. So they're not like shit coins or whatever. So all of these like criteria have to be met to make this worthwhile. But then there's one other magic piece of this puzzle that we haven't really talked about, and that's the UST itself. If you include UST in your pool, I talked to some of the different platforms. It's actually difficult to trade AUST. Like Loop Finance has some AUST LPs, but they're really relatively illiquid and there's too much slippage involved. It doesn't make sense. So imagine a grid bot or a rebalancer. Most of the UST in a rebalancer is not at any given moment being used, right? It's just sitting there waiting to be used on orders, right? On a like an order book. So what you could do instead is you could say, like, have most of the UST in AUST, and that would convert back to UST if an order had to be exerted, very similar to how Kujira is doing it right now. Kujira, if you have used their system, like, you stick AUST as your bid, and if the price of Luna goes down low enough, right, Kujira converts your AUST to UST and enters into the like bidding pool, right? I don't know if you've seen that. But basically, they solve the problem of having to trade an AUST by allowing AUST to be parked there. You can then convert it to UST for when the time to trade actually comes. This way, it's similar to what we're manually doing. Like if you guys have UST in Anchor and it's sitting on the earn side, and you're like waiting to buy some, let's say, Luna, you want to be earning the yield on your AUST, and then when the time comes to go buy something, then you sort of like take it out, you know, withdraw it, and then buy whatever you want. So all of this could be automated into this kind of system. And the beauty of this is back in the days of like grid bot trading on, you know, whether you're on Gate or on KuCoin or wherever, you didn't have a UST earning you yield or Tether earning you yield while it's sitting waiting to go into orders. And the second thing you didn't have is you didn't have bonded Atom or bonded Luna, which are basically just pumping out nonstop yield also, right? So all of your assets that are sitting there doing nothing, let's say in the Litecoin grid we referenced earlier, literally your USDT is just sitting there doing nothing while it's waiting to enter into orders. And your Litecoin does absolutely nothing because it doesn't earn any yield. And therefore, it's just sitting there doing nothing for you while it's waiting to go into orders. And all you're doing is writing the price action down and up. So the only benefit you're getting is the volatility arb component. Keep in mind, like grid bots, when set up reasonably well, can earn you APYs in the 100 to 200% APY fairly consistently, though, right? So that's the beauty of the grid bot. Rebalancer bots are probably not too far different from that, and maybe a little bit less impressive unless the price of the coin really goes up, because the rebalancer actually relies upon price appreciation more than anything. So my thought is you take something with a high likelihood of going up, therefore the rebalancer being better than the grid bot. You combine that with yield-bearing assets who are now that are now working for you while you're waiting. So you get not only the volatility arb yield between assets you like, so it's just buying you more Atom, it's buying you more Luna, it's getting you, you're building your UST pool simultaneously, nonstop, 24/7. You're getting the arb yield, the UST yield, and the native asset yields of things like Luna and Atom. And really, you're in a recipe for just straight up kicking ass. I mean, there is no, like, it's just a straight money printer at that point. There's no, like, there's nothing else I can envision that could do dramatically more. Where this is relevant is it could be beneficial for, like, treasuries in DAOs, or if you're, like, a quantitative trading platform. And the reason why this could be super lucrative is you can actually adjust a rebalancer pool to do slightly different things depending on your risk tolerance. So, for example, let's say I don't really want to risk much of my assets right now. Maybe I'm particularly bearish on the market or whatever. Or maybe I just don't, you know, I want my most of my cash to be in UST because I may have other needs for it, right? Like, not everyone has the same need for their money at any given moment, right? So if I have a majority of it in UST, like a 70%, 30% rebalancer, like 30% Luna, 70% UST, and then maybe another one that's 30% Atom, 70% UST. These are examples of ways to play with it. I've been dreaming up some other scenarios too, where you have rebalancers that try to predict price action a little bit. So if you've had a massive move to the downside, let's say, maybe your cash automatically gets converted to like a 80% Luna, 20% UST rebalancer. And if you have a massive move to the upside, maybe it automatically pushes more of the money the other direction. And like, there's almost like a slider where it rebalances the pools like spontaneously. The problem with doing too much shenanigans though, in terms of programming, is if you're wrong, you're just gonna miss out on a lot of the benefits. And I think sometimes the right answer might be oftentimes the simplest methods, not necessarily trying to overpredict. Because if you were really, really good at predicting the markets, right, you wouldn't need to do any of this shit. You would just simply sell the top and buy the bottom. If it was so easy to do, everyone would be like trillionaires and that would be the end of this discussion, right? So we already know that's not the case. That's why we're having this discussion of how to like yield optimize. You know, so you have already like yield optimizing systems like Luna, Stator Labs, which auto compounds your Luna. And like that basically really just dollar cost averages your yield back into more Luna, right? So that's sort of doing that to some extent, but it's not necessarily playing on the price action of Luna at all necessarily. And there may be times, like let's say, for example, Luna is going to go from, you know, what is it, $50 today, and it's going to go to like $400 by 3 months from now. If you enter into any of these kind of bot positions, you will miss out on most of those gains, right? So the reason to do rebalancer bots is more of a, I would say, a more long-term ETF-style risk-managed strategy, as opposed to necessarily the, like, you know, get rich quick, I know exactly what's going to happen scheme. Because if you knew exactly what was going to happen, right? If I thought Luna was going to go to $400 in a month, then I would take a 10x leverage long on some exchange and then call it a day, right? So all of this discussion is the presumption that you can't see the future, that technical analysis strategies will never be fully accurate, which they will not be. And therefore, you'd like to have a risk-managed, optimized strategy for your treasury, depending on how much price exposure you believe your treasury should have. Because looking at all these different treasuries on Terra, One of the problems has been this, like, what to do with the supposed protocol own liquidity. And do you trust a human being to behave as some kind of like DAO or hedge fund manager has been a real like concern for people. You know, everyone wants to have their coin go up in value. My view is there's only so many revenue drivers in crypto. Either your coin has a real world utility function, or B, it has a staking / network effect revenue driver function, or C, you're playing off the arbitrage volatility. That would be number three. There's just only so many ways to make a buck, right? Like there's only so many ways to buy and sell, so many permutations you could have, and so many types of revenue drivers. And I think once you make a list of those things, then you can figure out, okay, can I optimize this to and program it in such a way that it buys for me in a more efficient manner than like what would happen if I just simply bought something and held it? So that's the issue. And it's not that, like, if you look at hedge funds around the world, it's not like every single one of them always beats the index funds, right? Like, in fact, in the last 10 years, at least, while the stock markets, at least in the West, have been raging, you did worse if you like played around with hedge funds than if you just simply bought and held index funds. The problem is that's in an extraordinarily bullish, weird, like inflationary time frame. We're just printing money out the wazoo, and that may not always be the case. Hedge funds, part of their goal is to worry about the possibility that stock markets could go down for years at a time, recessions could occur, really bad problems can happen, and they're trying to preserve capital for their investors. So their goal is not always to make the highest income. Their goal may be more capital preservation. And I think when it comes to various DAOs and whatnot, you know, the members of the DAO are not interested in you blowing up their protocol related treasury, right? Like, so this is the problem. You're not unless the DAO is literally made to do highly aggressive trading, or your trading platform, your quantitative platform, that's just what your goal is, right? And it's just your money and you don't give a shit. That's one thing. As soon as you're starting to play with other people's money, it's a very different scenario, I think. And that gets people thinking, how can we optimize our money? And really, how can we do so on chain? Because if you have to leave with people's money to different destinations, then like it's hard to audit it. Whereas when everything's on chain and like you're a DAO and you plug your money into a Nexus vault or a Spectrum protocol, or you plug it into an LP, the idea is, well, like everyone can see what we did. Everyone can see what the treasury is doing, whether it's a, you know, NFT DAO or whatever. Like, you know, then you have a sort of internal transparency on chain. So that might be a possible, you know, reason to do this. Now, part of why I've stopped messing with entering too many rebalancers on KuCoin or Gate or whatever is because now that I have seen the light, which is these yield-bearing assets, which can actively earn yield while essentially liquid staked, like to me, there is no obvious reason to build any sort of bot until we have something on chain that can take advantage of everything I've just said, because it is essentially the future of algorithmic trading. And it can make way more money than any sort of stock trading that you can imagine. It can make way more money than any prior history of quantitative trading in the history of the world. Like when you have these kinds of wild yields, you have to be a complete and total moron to lose money at this point. Like, so we can build really cool things that are fairly low risk, with like risk profiles that are well understood and that people can enter into and feel good about them working. That's my monologue sort of. Maybe you can ask some questions and think about like what you're trying to build.
Yeah, no, that was good. Good overview. Thank you. And how do you think Mars protocol fits into all of this?
So Mars, let's just talk about leverage in general. I think the obvious thing about leverage is, one is leverage has an advantage if for some reason you know for sure that you're buying a bottom or a top. That's whether it's shorting something, or longing something, whether that's talking about like Lavana, for example, that's going to provide like 2x longs and 2x short type positions by using Mars as its backbone. You are talking about essentially a concept where you believe not only are you buying a bottom or a top, but the time period in which you believe that price is going to fall or rise is relatively short. Why? Because the cost to borrow when you're talking about leverage tends to vary from low, like anchor leverage right now, versus particularly very high cost to borrow, like when you're talking about perpetuals on KuCoin or something like that, where the fees tend to add up really quickly and you're really only wanting to use it for sort of instantaneous price movements. And that of course is why like you get a lot of the volatility squeezes in crypto. Once price has like flattened out for a while, people feel more and more like gutsy to go throw in a larger and larger long position and borrow for it. And that's why prices suddenly spike and go crazy, right? We call them breakouts or whatever. So if you're talking about Mars or Anchor, I think any kind of borrowing strategy that you would do would have to imply something about you being at the relative bottom of one of your grids or relative top of a grid, and now you're sort of taking on leverage. The thing is, like, I think the leverage to me makes more sense if you're going to risk money you've already made, right? So, like, let's say we talked earlier about, like, bonded Atom, bonded Luna, or for that matter, AUST. If you're able to drive those funds in some concerted manner, let's say they all that UST gets held until an opportunity arises. Either someone manually like takes those funds and buys an asset on leverage, right, at a relative bottom, let's say, or you have an algorithmic system that basically takes on more leverage as price falls. Then you have to look at like what is the cost to borrow and what is your liquidation risk. So I think that's going to vary on Mars. It's going to vary depending on which coin you're talking about and which liquidation levels are set by those specific contracts. When we discuss this with Jose, in terms of the structure of this, each individual potential for leverage contracts you can enter into are going to be very different on Mars, so that we're going to have to see what kind of like leverage products get released by different protocols, on the what's called Field of Mars, which is like where you go and you play with this. So Mars, I think that sort of remains to be seen as far as how I'm going to use that in this type of context. To me, it's like the use of leverage. I think if it can be used in fairly small increments in low risk ways and done in ways that are algorithmic, that you can be pretty sure you're getting a good outcome, I think it makes sense. If the cost to borrow or the tendency towards liquidations tends to negate your portfolio gains, I think it's just going to be a waste of time. Like leverage, I don't know that leverage wouldn't just be considered greedy. When considering like your AUST is already making you freaking 20%, your Luna is making you close to 9%, and your Atom is making you 14%, and we can't figure out some way to make megabucks with that, yet we want to also add leverage to it with Mars or Anchor. So I think you can add leverage. I don't know that it's necessarily always wrong, but like, I don't know, take price action right now is a good example. And I think when everyone's pissed off and the price is relatively lower, that's a great time to sort of analyze this. Or when in March, when Luna was like at $5, right? When Luna was at $5, you have everyone laughing and saying, see, I told you so, the thing was going to crash, and look at all these liquidations and Anchor, and hey, Luna's going to go back to $1, it's going to 0, it's a Ponzi, blah, 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 right? So when the price is low, the reality is most people, whether you're individually trading or whether you're fueling a bot, you're not sure how much capital to exert at $5 Luna, right? Like I bought a lot of Luna at $5 and it went down to like $4, And of course, my wife thinks I'm an idiot because I bought it at 5 and it goes down to 4. That's just how people that don't trade think. But at the same time, like it went from 16 to 12 to 5 and then like 4-ish, right? So you're never going to catch the exact bottom. That's not possible. A automatically scaling system on an algorithmic platform will scale, you know, appropriately. And you could theoretically scale your leverage as such too, by the way. You could say, okay, I'm going to take larger and larger leverage positions. And maybe if I'm going to take leverage, I'm not going to just go on a geometric grid like we talked about, where I'm going to go on an aggressively pro rata or a conservative, I should say, pro rata grid on the way down. So, for example, I might only buy more on leverage if the price of Luna drops 5% at a time. And when it does that, if it drops 5% from here, I'm going to take a 1x leverage position. If it drops 10% from here, I'm going to take a 2x leverage position, et cetera, et cetera. So the amount of capital I have to waste is small, or risk, I should say. And the amount of potential gain, if it goes up, is much higher. And fortunately, crypto tends to bounce hard from bottoms within a 2 or 3 month period, so the cost to borrow may not be that bad. But that's the thing. When you include leverage, then you add another time problem, which is the cost to borrow. And if the cost to borrow is low, you're cool. If the cost to borrow is expensive, it may eat away at your gains anyway and may not make it worth like doing it at all. That's kind of my thought on leverage, but maybe you could chime in.
Yeah, sure. And so yeah, I mean, leverage obviously goes both ways. And if we park the concept of leverage aside for a second and just talk about the strategies and the options that you mentioned, even if you optimize it into, you know, 1-3 click type solution, you're still facing with making fairly sophisticated choices where you need to have deep understanding like you do in terms of what is it that you want to do. Is there a way to optimize it even further and perhaps have something that is just a ready-made product where people just choose and kind of trust the, you know,
For sure. I think the simplest thing to do here is I like what Apollo DAO has done with its vaults, where you basically deposit UST and it, you know, it plugs in all the numbers, it buys sufficient UST and it plugs in enough of the underlying like asset for its auto compounders. Like if you play with those, you'll see what I'm talking about. Because I think when you plug in UST, it's simple. And people understand it. The other way you could fuel a bot would be, let's say someone has Luna, but they don't want to sell it. They just want to like deposit in there. The protocol would then like convert that to bonded Luna so that it's the bonded asset, and then maybe only use the yield off of that, right? So there are some, I think the most conservative way to offer a product or protocol would be to use the yield that you're getting, sort of like a pylon protocol situation, and you use that yield to then optimize ways for people to make maybe additional money. That would be the most conservative thing. And then the most aggressive thing would be, like you said before, like you basically get fresh UST and you plug it into whichever vault you think is interesting. And you would basically like set the vaults up to like low risk, medium risk, high risk, or something like that, in terms of what we perceive as the, like, I guess, short-term risk concern. Because really, the risk in most of these examples is not the idea that you think that, like, Luna or Atom are going to go to zero, right? I don't think, like, that's our core risk that we're worried about. I think the primary risk is time. And for these types of tactics to be effective, a person has to be patient enough to park their money in one of these things, right? So yeah, a low risk situation be something that you believe is unlikely to be very negative compared to how much money I put in today. So if I put $1,000 in today into an 80% UST, 20% Luna pool, you know, the odds are that the portfolio is not going to be wrecked if the market goes down, you know, in the next month, right? Or if I have to exit this position, I could exit without being at substantial loss, right? Like, let's say Luna drops, you know, 20% or 30%, let's say 50%, but the portion of the portfolio that Luna is only 20%, I still have 90% of my total portfolio still intact in case I need that money for something. So that would be an example of something that you'd consider like a low risk pool. But, you know, it's even lower risk because you're getting yield from both your assets, right? So the UST coming off of that bonded Luna, the UST coming off the AUST can really just sort of like bolster your position to where a 20% yield earning situation, like, right, like you're basically mitigating 20% of your, or let's say it's an average of that. Let's say 20% UST, let's say it's 10% Luna. So let's say you're actually making a yield of about 15% on your total position if it's a 50-50 scenario, right? So in a year, you can mitigate basically 15% of your volatility risk through the yield alone, right? So that's how these things would help you, is the yield mitigates volatility risk, the arbitrage rebalancing mitigates volatility risk, and now you have a pool that essentially will grow over time. It may not make you, you know, megabucks instantaneously, but, you know, if you let this run for years, you'll probably do pretty well, more than likely. Like, you can't envision a scenario, except for the underlying assets going to shit, that it would not work out for you. So that would be the way I would look at it. But like, vaults that you set up, you know, into categories that are simple to use, where you just basically push, I want to put UST into this, this vault, and it just runs it. And the way that this is also capital efficient is if you do a vault strategy as opposed to something like a grid bot. So the rebalancer is actually more efficient because a grid bot requires lots and lots more transactions. And a grid bot would be specific to like an individual, right? Because you have to enter into a grid bot with specific parameters today, and you've got to run a cloud instance or whatever of that, you know, per person, which is not really rational on an on-chain situation. What makes more sense to me is you're in a vault. You can enter that rebalancer vault at any time, and it's going to measure your proportion of that vault when you enter it and when you exit, and that tells you how much profit you have made. And you can have a dashboard that shows how much money the vault's making, how much it's growing over what period of time, and a person can watch that set of meters and go, hey, wait, is this something I'm interested in? So I think a dashboard would be critical to the intuitiveness of this. But I think the fact that you're talking about multiple yield-bearing assets is not something that is going to be like, it's going to take a rocket science degree to understand. Once people understand what it is, they'll become popular super quickly, like pretty much automatically, in my opinion. Like, I don't think you'll have to like do a lot of education after the fact.
If we expand a little bit on some of the risks, if you're just keeping BLUNA in your wallet, right, you're accruing whatever that yield is, but converted into UST as opposed to paid in kind or 60% paid in kind, correct?
That's right. Like, so all of BUST, bonded LUNA takes all of the LUNA and UST and all the other dust, and it gives you back UST. And bonded Luna was designed to be used on Anchor Protocol, obviously, so they can take that yield and pay it out to the depositors on Anchor Earn, right? That's kind of what that was designed for. But you could definitely build around the bonded Luna system because it's pretty easy to get that UST back. There really is no risk from that perspective. Oh, and the other interesting thing about bonded Luna, by the way, and this is something to take a strong note on, is remember, when the price of Luna is down, it's actually cheaper than Luna is usually, right? Because of all the different arbitrage issues that take place. Mm-hmm. So you might have when price is really low, the bonded Luna difference is almost a buy signal almost every time. Like every time you have a 2% arb rate, you could pretty much dollar cost it average in every single time and just buy Luna outright and convert it to bonded Luna. So if you go to Astroport, you know, technically a rebalancer bot, you could actually buy direct to bonded Luna at the bottoms because you almost always get either the same price or cheaper for your bonded Luna. And you want the bonded Luna anyway because you want it for the purposes of the yield, right? So actually, it would automatically arbitrage bonded Luna at the cheapest prices for you when you do this bot, because that's exactly when you're going to end up having the bot activate during times of volatility, right? So So you're basically always getting cheaper deals on your Luna just because you're buying bonded Luna.
Yeah, I keep track of it through RB on Telegram. I don't know if you know the.
Yeah, exactly. But you see what I'm getting at, though, right? Like, if you're buying on Astroport, your bot is buying UST to bonded Luna. Much of the time, you're getting a better deal than Luna itself, obviously. So you're getting more bonded Luna. But the thing is, it doesn't matter that bonded Luna's price is lower. The yield is the same as Luna, right? Like if you bought, let's say it costs you 2% less to get bonded Luna in your bot, but you would have otherwise just gotten Luna and had to stake it. You're actually getting 2% more bonded Luna, but the yield is not any less as a result of that, which is fascinating, right? So that's a cool feature of it.
And your yield is higher by definition.
Yeah, see, that's why, you know, I think you're going to have the same thing happen with bonded ETH and bonded Atom with these ARB situations. And I think you could also build an interesting bot. An interesting way you could do it would be, like, let's say you wanted to take the UST that's coming off these emissions and you go, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to have this thing buy whichever one dropped the most in the last month, bonded ETH, bonded Atom, or whatever, right? And you could kind of do a little fuzzy math with whichever one is at the lowest, the best ARB you get, just go ahead and get that one. Like, why not? It's a free, risk-free extra anyway, right? So, but you were asking about risk, like, what was your question about, like?
No, just in terms of, yeah, underlying risk, all of this is somewhat predicated on the sustainability of Anchor.
Well, the bonded assets are useful irrespective of Anchor one way or the other. I don't think that's going to be an issue. There's not really a situation where you're not going to be able to borrow off of Anchor either. Like what the UST yield is, and whether that stays 19.5% or 20% or whether it goes down to 10%. It doesn't really matter because all of these bots will work regardless of what that yield actually is. Because remember, on KuCoin or Gate, you're getting zero yield, right? So clearly, yeah, but obviously if the yield goes down, the performance of the system is going to degrade some, but it's still pretty amazing, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, like even a 10% yield would be pretty amazing. I hear you.
I mean, it's all about rate of change also. Like, you know, 19 is pretty outrageous and 10 is really high, but then people will say, oh, I was getting 19 yesterday. But yeah, I agree with you. Look, it's just really mind-blowing the amount of opportunities that's out there and, you know, emerging, especially now that we're moving towards the multi-chain world where you can bring assets back and forth. It's a really interesting case study and in practice too, what you've been doing, you know, arbing and creating grid bots on KuCoin. There's no reason why it shouldn't exist on chain.
Yeah. Another thing you might want to research is, okay, like White Whale, so they have audited their flash loan system with AUST. The ability to, I guess arbitrage things or find ARB deals. Since White Whale is kind of a community project, I believe their audited code for all of that is available for, I think, outsiders to use. Like, I don't think you have, I think they'll either give you the code or they will allow you to use their system. So additional possibilities include the use of flash loan for sort of like ninja arbitrage trades, like what White Whale is doing for the UST peg. And you know, if you have a system, and the way that flash loans work is they'll take UST that you're otherwise getting Anchor yield on, and they'll, my understanding is the way that they work is if you have a very quick, like trade you can make within one block, some kind of arbitrage, and you can execute the whole thing and it shows as being profitable with slippage and everything else included, then it will give you the flash loan and you can make that money instantaneously with some kind of a bot. I'm not too familiar with how that all works. That's sort of more like the White Whale team could kind of get into the details. but I think they were willing to leverage the white whale system for some of these type of strategies too. So I think like the way to use those types of features would be with yield that you are already making. So if you're already getting yield off Bonded Luna, Bonded Atom, AUST, and now you feel comfortable risking that yield to do some wacky shit, that makes sense to me. I'm not a huge fan of putting people's underlying assets at risk, like the ability to lose substantial amounts of, say, the Bonded Luna, the Bonded Atom, or the underlying base amount of UST. I think a lot of the reason why we're talking about all this is the goal is to not blow up a portfolio. The goal is to make money over time in a perhaps risk-free way, but that is more efficient or more interesting in terms of output than simply holding the individual assets on their own, right? Because the only thing that I've added to this besides just simply buy and hold, or you just manually doing this, right? Like, for example, any one of you could manually do this. You could put some money into like Anchor Earn, and then when there's some yield that emerges, okay, you made a, you know, $50 worth of yield, and you went and go bought yourself some Luna, you know, arbed it, you got the Bonded Luna, it's sitting there, and eventually you claim the UST from it, and you manually go and do something with it, right? The goal here would be to do it in larger scale, leveraging the fact that you're getting the benefit of the volatility. And with vaults, oh, I forgot to mention, what's interesting about vaults is the way Terra works, the fees, like if I do a $1 million order or I do a $100 order, the fees are not much different, right? So you want to lump together as many transactions simultaneously in theory as you can without invoking too much slippage on the AMMs. So I know what Nexus was investigating when they're building a rebalancer bot for us, because they were doing one of these ideas for me to see if we can make it happen. They were investigating how much slippage was happening through Astroport and such, such that larger orders, you know, you don't want them to, you just want slippage, obviously, if everyone knows what slippage is, hopefully. You make massive orders and, you know, you're getting less than you thought you're paying for. So
how's it going with Nexus, by the way?
I think they're getting close to building a simple rebalancer. So 70-30, 50-50, 30-70 Luna UST. And I think their first plan was to sort of like try to execute this and see if it works. And then from there, go and like you can start doing all these other permutations or whatever. So there's a lot of room for lots of different types of strategies, permutations, and how you do it. You know, you may not, like some people might prefer a community project as opposed to one that's like a, like VC-backed or like investor-backed project. Because in a community project, you could essentially make the system almost like free for everyone to use. And the reason why that's interesting, and not even have a coin or something for it, right? Which would be interesting. The reason is because, like, these things, I'm pretty confident, are so lucrative that the protocol itself makes money just by, like, running its own money in the protocol. It's really that good. I don't know that you need to necessarily have, like, a coin and then, a funding round and all this other shit that goes around with, like, the usual, like, crypto shenanigans. So I think a community project could be super interesting, especially, I mean, even if there is a coin for it, and maybe there's some value accrual mechanism for that coin that sort of builds with this system. A lot more people would be interested in like tokenomics that were like heavily community distributed, whereas more centralized systems, I don't know, that the coins are hard to maintain their value. I think DAOs and NFT projects, everybody's having the same problem of how do you get maximum community support if most of the tokens on those kinds of projects aren't distributed to the community. So I don't know if you're intending to try to make a coin out of this and then do a whole value accrual mechanism, but we didn't even talk about the fact that you could do other elements to this system, by the way. There are other interesting primitives on Terra. One of that one of those that's really interesting is the Prism, the X Prism token, right? You could enter the X Prism token as a volatility introducer into the platform, and it's natively gaining value over time, which makes it additionally interesting. So things like Luna X, things like X Prism, where the coin actually goes up in value, could also introduce additional mix of like investment strategies. But what are your thoughts on the idea of like, were you trying to get like a coin created around this, or what's your theory?
No, it's interesting. It's obviously up for feedback and discussion. I'm not entering in a coin here. It's just you provide a service. You kind of simplify the whole process of onboarding, because I mean, you could see people trying to figure out how to maintain value of their protocol through lock drops and lockups, and you know, it's all fine, and I participate in most of them. But if you're providing a simple service, perhaps there's just a simple arrangement where you come in and you commit either UST outright or Luna or Biluna that you've got, and you just want to, you know, get a little bit more creative than say a Stata protocol where they auto compound, and perhaps with the yield you create a slightly more sophisticated strategy that is automated. And you know, perhaps there's also some sort of a fee there that's embedded where you know, maybe the protocol takes, I don't know, X percent, some small amount off of realized profits.
Yeah, I mean, what the bot trading platforms do, and you know, a quick review of those to see what their fee structure would be like, probably is worth your while. But they basically just take typically a per trade fee, which can actually accrue to quite a bit. I think the fees vary substantially from like 0.5% to something. But you want to make sure that the fee structure is so small and negligible that the protocol becomes ultra popular, and then that generates your revenue. You don't want to try to jip people on the fees and then make the system less efficient. Because you've got to make those ARBs, the volatility ARBs have to be made, including any kind of like exchange slippage fees and everything else involved. You'd have to sort of do some experimenting with how that would work. Now, it is, you know, when all this UST is being emitted, right, you could argue that like some portion of the UST emitted from the bonded assets and AUST simply goes into the protocol fee, right? Like, and you don't even have to bother programming a system that like takes fees on the arbitrage trades themselves, right? I think that might be the cleanest way to go. I think that's what Kujira did. They made the percentage APY on the AUST you hold there lower by a few, I think 5%, and they sort of pocket that as the fee for holding it there and to run their protocol. And then they're doing some like buybacks of their token or something like that. I'm not sure I understand it. I didn't read all of it. It's the like SQG or something like that token. Anyway, they sort of revised their tokenomics with the idea of like increasing the value accrual to the token, because they already had a token and they created that. I think a protocol as a service and just charging like a background fee, not even bothering with a coin and this and that, is actually even probably faster and maybe more transparent for people. Like a lot of these things don't need a coin, like you said, they just don't. Like you don't go to KuCoin and buy a KuCoin coin in order to do this. I take that back. Yeah, you do. Like if you do your, if you pay your fees with the KuCoin coin, the fees are less, I think, you know.
Right, so, same thing with Kujira, yeah. Right? It's 50%.
Yeah, so I think exactly. You can withdraw from Kujira. Like there's a utility function in a coin and all that. I don't know. I think like, realistically, the primary revenue of a protocol or a DAO is going to be on the most predictable is going to be the yield. So that if you have like $100 million on your protocol and you're making, you know, 0.5% a year, you're doing pretty good, right? Like, so I think that's the fairest approach, and I think people have the least problems with it. And you'll get, because you want like totally frictionless use of the system. And what you want really is the customer you're attracting with these type of products, you're attracting the anchor borrower, if you think about it, right? Because if I'm going to borrow using UST on Anchor, I'm already taking a risk by putting Luna up as collateral. If I can put that UST into a process that like legit makes me consistent APY, consistent income, where I feel safe to borrow, I'm more likely to borrow more. And I'm also more likely to borrow more, one, because I think the yield's going to be good. But I'm also more likely to borrow more because I can pay off that loan if I get in trouble, right? If the market goes the wrong way. So you don't want a system that forces people, like, if you're going to build something, I would say you'd want to do it where you don't lock up their assets in such a way that they can't go and pay back their loan. Nexus is built in a slightly more unique way because they already built a system to like borrow off of Luna, right? You know how that, you've used Nexus, you probably know how that works. They could build something pretty interesting in that they could actually borrow off of your Luna and use that to execute the strategy I'm talking about, so that you can both maintain your original in Luna exposure by simply depositing on Nexus, and whatever crap that happens in the background just gets paid to you back in APY, right? Like, you don't even need to know how it works. All you need to know is you're getting paid in return for doing it. So that's a slightly different model to think about.
Makes sense.
So yeah, any other kind of big questions that jump out? I know there's some folks that were trying to hop on for questions earlier, but I was trying to flesh out the details really closely with you first, since you wanted to talk about this. let's see. Any of you guys that have been listening kind of are following what we're saying here? I think everyone sort of figured it out, what we're trying to do here. Like, I don't think it's that mysterious. I think everyone's like, when are we building this? Like, like, hurry up. So, like, which part of this, like, which strategy seems attractive to you, man? Like, what is your thinking here?
I think all of it. And you start with something that is simple and intuitive and see where it goes.
Yeah. And I think it's nice to be able to have a system that you could scale for like new assets that arrive, right? So if like whatever bonded assets arrive, all you have to do is like a plug and play, you know, and next thing you know, you have vault number 17 or whatever. I think that's the way to go, is just keep making, you know, and you know, you could make little mini versions of this that are interesting, that, you know, as experiments or whatever, to see if people like them or not. And if you find that like some of them don't have much utilization, you could say, well, you know, we won't expand on those. We're going to build on the ones that make more money or whatever.
When do you think liquidity becomes an issue?
Well, as long as there's no leverage involved, it like never technically, because similar to how an LP works, like the system would always work for any newcomer that shows up. So there's no Ponzinomics going on. Because you're not guaranteeing that a person's going to be able to exit this with the exact amount of money they started with, right? So like, so if the way you would mathematically set this up is, let's say, the day that I enter the pool, a calculation is performed that says how much of the pool that I own on that day, and then based on that, that sort of like tells you how much pool ownership I have, sort of like how much LP token, for example, someone owns. And then when you sell that LP token, that value, there is a value to that at that time. So, you know, that would be a possible way to do this, by the way, is using like an LP token style model. That way, when you exit and when you enter, at the value of the pool and the value of your LP token sort of defines the math there. I think what Apollo DAO does is like, it just does it all for you. It, like, in the background, you have an LP token, but when you enter, you can go and buy UST. When you exit, you can exit via UST. So I like that because I think it's simpler for people to, I think it's simpler for people to decide what to do. It's simpler from sometimes like a tax perspective, if you're paying attention to that. You know, the more weirdness you get with the interface and the like the tax harvesting related issues, I think the more people get nervous about using these things as well. So you want to eliminate that nervousness too.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, super helpful.
Let's get Philip on here for a sec. What's up, Philip?
Hi. Thanks for the great discussion and also laying out the strategies with the bots. I liked it very much. There's a lot of great thinking from you. I'm struggling a bit with this bot strategy is first, like you said, you have a lot of good alternatives now in decentralized finance with the liquidity pools. And second, what I'm also thinking about, if you try to set up, for example, a bot by yourself, you also have a lot of risk involved because you need to do it really bulletproof. Otherwise, maybe it gets hacked.
Yeah.
And if it controls all your funds, it's also a big risk.
Unless you're fairly comfortable with like doing these yourself, we're not really suggesting the idea of people just like going out and learning Rust or whatever and like setting up their own system. I think this is not like a beginner level thing if you're going to put any serious amount of money in it. This would be like Jimmy or somebody making something like like really good. So individual bots are very different than like a vault-based system that does this in the background. And, think about... hold up a second. I'm like getting a phone call here. So think about it from the perspective more of like building these on chain or on protocols, I should say, and the execution happens on chain, but you, the user, don't have to figure all this nonsense out. The difference is like I have a good sense of.
So if there could be possibly LP positions out there on certain DEXs that have sort of higher opportunities, in yield farming, like for example, in Osmosis. But the problem with long-term yield farming is those yield farms don't last forever and the APYs don't last forever. And to me, if you're going to go through the trouble of building something, it needs to be something that can work sort of in perpetuity. So it needs to rely upon either yields or principles that are going to work forever without depending on external sources of revenue or incentives. Does that make sense? Like that, that's my feeling about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, just some food for thought for you guys. Hopefully you were able to catch that up. I'm getting some like emergency style phone call of some kind. So I need to kind of like catch that here. Maybe we can catch up some other time if you guys have like more, specifics in terms of what you're trying to build, and hopefully this kind of like wrapped it into some ideas that might make sense for you.
Excellent, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, hopefully everyone caught something useful out of this. But if people want to practice and play around, I would go to examine like what's available on KuCoin or on Gate.io or Pionex, and that'll give you at least a feeling for what various types of bots sort of do. And the ones I would focus on are things like rebalancers, what they call infinity bots, and grid bots. Those are the three main ones. There's all sorts of other little, tactics people use for bot trading, but I would say that those are sort of the most mathematically obvious strategies. Just sort of poke around, look at them, and you can use you can look at most of them without signing up for an account. You can just sort of like see what they do and how they're set up. Always go to the custom settings page where it allows you to like change any of the parameters, and you can just sort of see what these things do, and you won't understand how they perform necessarily, but at least you get this feeling of the structure, and then you can figure out if it makes sense to build that into something. But of all the ones I've used, I feel like the rebalancers type strategy is the one that's most straightforward to build into this type of system, at least on chain, at least as far as I can tell. So take a look at those and see.
Sounds good.
Okay, guys. All right. Yeah, have fun. And
thanks, everyone.
I did record this, so if anyone missed it, or we went over the entire overview here, so it's hopefully it's a worthwhile listen if you caught the back end of this or something. Okay. All right. We'll catch up later. Okay.
Cheers.
Yeah. See you later.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a CeFi Space Quantitative Trading for Treasuries, recorded on Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sipping on a little bit of sin, I've been giving. Try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute, reality ain't got limits. Going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics. Stretching out the distance, for instance, let me be specific. The risk is hedge funding the business. Betting on the difference, ingesting all the research. Sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first. Sleep tight, little dreamer. Early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor. Taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension, something to endear myself a little bit, something kind of embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an awe sound. It's true. It really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. When it's fine if I don't know, I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll, tip the first domino. Feeling up, I'm in a bowl with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road, gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground sore. And I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in, I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be seizing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little has to do with what everything is, but it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives unto ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge, but important nonetheless.
Terra Spaces.